You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Jessica Toku Ingoa. No mai haere mai ki te Wire. Mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rahina Monday. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'll be with you for the next hour. E whai aki nei coming up on the show. For our regular catch-up, I speak to Axe Simon Court about rates increases facing homeowners across the motu and investment in local infrastructure. I speak to Jewish New Zealander and co-founder of Dayenu, New Zealand Jews Against Occupation, Justine Sachs, about Winston Peters' comments comparing co-governance in Aotearoa to Nazi Germany, and Future Israel spokesperson Suraya Sindhu Singh discusses their opposition to the government's plans for transport. He aha o whakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch. Tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395 or wire mai rāne. Give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. Ka oa I wariwari, I ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene, kōrero ano he pakihiri roki roki maurunga I te pai tuku tuku o irirangi poho mi haere ki 95 BFM irakati.com, and you can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
Homeowners across the country are facing an average rates rise of 15% in the next year. Councils say they need to balance the need for investment with affordable rates increases, but that budgetary pressures have reached a tipping point. For our weekly interview, I spoke to ex-Simon Court about their party's stance on investing in local infrastructure amid the government reducing funding for public transport. Here is that interview.
So we've seen rates increases for homeowners which are being proposed across the country by local councils. Is this something of concern to you?
It certainly is, and that's because rates increases another pressure on affordability on the household budget. And when we think about what the rates are meant to fund, infrastructure, services, picking up the rubbish, dog control, all of those things, the cost of everything has gone up, but the amount that rates have risen has far exceeded inflation. Last year was a record rates rise of around 10% on average, well ahead of inflation. This year, some councils are forecasting a 15 or even 20%. And so we have to have a good look at what's driving this.
Do you believe that councils are doing enough to keep rates down for homeowners?
Councils face some pretty stark pressures at the moment. If you look at the cost of delivering infrastructure, I think Local Government New Zealand last week released a report saying that the price of delivering a bridge has gone up by around 30%. And they also have other cost pressures to continue delivering services, which many communities have come to take for granted. But the problem is they haven't matched the cost of delivering their infrastructure and services to the amount of money they're collecting from ratepayers, residents and service users. So if you take a step back and look at the amount they're spending, it's actually increasing, but the amount of revenue that they're collecting has not. So councils face a crunch point, and that's where they're at right now, particularly in places like Wellington, where they've underinvested in their water infrastructure for decades, and now they've reached a point where the average age of their pipes is well over 50 years old, some of them well over 100, and they need to do large-scale renewals and replacements, which will cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars over the next few years. So now it's crunch time. Do they raise rates, or do they look for other sources of revenue, such as, you know, in Auckland, we're used to having water meters. There's only one place in Wellington that has water meters, and that's the Kapiti Coast. Everyone else just sees the water running down the street and doesn't actually link that to the amount they're paying for water, because they don't get a bill for water like we do in Auckland. What else could they do to minimise the pressure on rates rises? Well, Christchurch City Council has assets, Auckland Council has assets, Wellington has assets like their shareholding in their airport, many of which they deem to be strategic. But if you were a business owner or a homeowner and you were trying to balance the books, you just have to make a call. You know, are there some things that we can sell so we can use that money to invest in other things? Or are we going to pretend that, you know, having some shares in an airport is so important that we would never sell them, even though, you know, we're actually not able to afford to pay for the things we need? Now, that wouldn't make sense in a household or a business budget, and it certainly doesn't make sense from a local government point of view either.
Does the government have any plans to help the council meet its budget needs?
So one of the things I'm looking into in my role as Undersecretary for Infrastructure is what tools should be available or could we make better use of in local government. We have an Infrastructure Funding and Financing Act that was passed in 2020, which was meant to allow councils to raise money for large infrastructure projects. In Wellington, it's a new wastewater treatment plant, around about $400 million, but raise those funds from the private sector and hold them in what's called a special purpose vehicle, essentially a company set up for the purpose of funding a particular asset or program. Now, what that means is the users will still pay for it over time, but that debt doesn't sit on the council's books, and it just provides another opportunity for councils to raise money. Another thing the government will be looking into, and I'll be looking into in my portfolio, is this concept of sharing some of the GST collected by central government on things like building construction, for example, back with the councils where that building and where that residential development is occurring. Because councils have costs associated with that, and if they were to receive some revenue back from the centre associated with the development, then it could certainly incentivise them to go ahead with delivering their own infrastructure, but also looking at housing and development as a positive, rather than just having to be concerned with all the negatives, you know, the cost and the amount of time that councils take up with actually managing development in their areas. So, you know, better use of the Infrastructure Funding and Financing Act, and let's look at sharing some of the GST back from the centre, back to the regions where it was generated.
And how about funding public transport? What are the government's plans in terms of that that could help take some of the burden off councils to make it more accessible and affordable for people?
Well, unfortunately, the amount of money available for transport in general isn't keeping up with Kiwis' demands, particularly for better public transport. And the problem is that there is no more money to share from the centre. The National Land Transport Fund is limited by what it can collect from fuel excise duty, road user charges, vehicle registrations, for example. That fund is pretty tight. And in the government's draft general policy statement for land transport, it sets out public transport funding will be capped. And in fact, what we will need to do is increase the share of the fares paid by passenger back to around 50% on average. It's dropped to as little as 15%, I understand. And what that means is that the cost to councils and the cost to central government far outweighs the amount that passengers are paying, and that balance has to be struck. So I would expect that passengers will be paying more to use public transport, but again, you know, the cost of everything has increased, and it's only fair that passengers pay their share.
Those that use public transport are overwhelmingly lower income New Zealanders, and you've mentioned that they need to pay their share. Wouldn't you say that homeowners having increased rates to pay would be them paying their share, considering increased costs of living here in Aotearoa?
Well, I think the problem is that if you don't encourage the users to pay their fair share, then it's very, very difficult to justify ongoing funding at high levels from the centre. And while you might point out that, you know, generally lower income people, and they might be students, they might be people just starting out in their life of work, tend to use public transport more. And the alternative is they would have to use private transport, which means owning a car and paying for petrol, paying for maintenance, paying for insurance. So there are some real clear benefits in that trade-off between, you know, am I prepared to pay a slightly higher bus fare versus am I going to invest in a private motor vehicle and have all of those costs? And I think we've just got used to this idea that there is an unlimited amount of money coming from the centre. That's what the previous government had promised New Zealanders, including students and young workers. It's not true. And now there is a reckoning where we actually have to work out how to pay for the things that we need and how much they're worth to us. Public transport is really important. But it's not something that can be delivered at no cost to the user.
And that was ex-Simon Court on rates rises affecting homeowners.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Mister.
Sorry, Mittens, our plan has failed.
Rats! Why couldn't she just forget me? All I want is to be a street cat.
We'll need a new plan.
I've got it. All we need is a realistic life-size cutout of me.
First, we'll need the perfect photo. I'll head to ProGear. Oh, yes, perfect. More paw. Lovely. You're a natural.
ProGear Photographic. For photos so crisp, you'll think they aren't photos. Head to ProGear for all your photography needs. Open now at 3 Railway Street, Newmarket, or go to progear.co.nz.
You're listening to Talking Tracks on PBNZ.
And as I said, Frith, if this harpsichord is gauche, then what's Max Martin? Seriously, though, a crisp and ebullient debut from this young artist. Mm. And now from our new contributor, Daryl?
Yeah, mate.
Are you trying to humiliate me?
No.
Is this funny to you? Screeching uncultured no-fi bullshit? Get out!
Real pain for sham friends. Dirtbag Radio. For real friends.
'Cause I wanna go out and get drunk and dance.
Dirtbag Radio. Mondays, 7 to 9pm with Rapley. Thanks to Go Cooler Music, Auckland's newest secondhand music store at 370A Broadway Newmarket. Only on 95BFM.
Smoking. Is it our future? Is a pickup line you could use at the Cigarettes After Sex show? If it goes badly, just say you were talking about the repeal of New Zealand's tobacco ban. Look who is up to date with political news. That's cute.
We have tickets to give away to Cigarettes After Six. Just tune in to 95BFM Breakfast all week for your cue to enter. Cigarettes After Six, X's World Tour, Spark Arena, March 19, 2025. Get your tickets at livenation.co.nz.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
During his State of the Nation speech in Palmerston North this weekend, Winston Peters compared co-governance in Aotearoa to Nazi Germany. In a statement, Day In New Zealand Jews Against Occupation called the Deputy Prime Minister's comments anti-Māori and anti-Semitic. I spoke to Jewish New Zealander and Day In New co-founder Justine Sachs about what she believes the consequences are of a statement like this coming from a senior politician like Peters. What is your response to Winston Peters' comments over the weekend?
I was absolutely appalled and disgusted by the Deputy Prime Minister's comments. We do hear people making light of the Shoah, the Holocaust and Nazi Germany and using it as like a rhetorical tool to kind of win arguments. That happens. But to hear it come from like someone like the Deputy Prime Minister is really disturbing. It does belittle the horror that was the Holocaust, the horror that was Nazi Germany, and it's deeply offensive to compare our obligations under, you know, Te Tiriti or Waitangi to give Māori a seat at the table and to let them have a say in decisions that impact their communities, to compare that to supremacist, deeply violent ideology. And I think everybody knows that comparison is just so inverted. It doesn't reflect reality, because supremacy is about, you know, oppression, oppressing a people. And what we're doing when we try to uphold Te Tiriti or Waitangi is actually heal and repair from the harms of oppression, right, and colonization. So the comparison is just topsy-turvy. It's so, so offensive. For Jewish New Zealanders and Māori, I believe, and I'm just shocked to hear it. You know, it's a deeply irresponsible comment, yeah.
What implications are you concerned that a comment like this coming from a senior politician in particular could have?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm going to be really stark here and say that I think it's a form of Holocaust denial, in a sense. To compare something as, you know, like, something like co-governance to Nazi Germany, it is a form of Holocaust denial, because it's the belittling of what Nazi Germany was and what it represents to so many people who were impacted by that regime. To compare it to, you know, attempts to make Aotearoa more equitable, a more equal place is just really disturbing. I think it fans the flames of anti-Semitism. I think it fans the flames of anti-Māori racism. And to come from the Deputy Prime Minister, it gives it some legitimacy. So I'm really disturbed. I'm really, really disturbed. It's like, the Deputy Prime Minister is like an internet comment section come to life yesterday. It was not something you like to see. I don't know. And I think there needs to be political consequences. Clearly this, like, Christopher Luxon has lost control of this, of his coalition. If there are no consequences, what does that say? Like, this is okay, it's not okay. So I'm looking forward, like, I think the pressure needs to be really on the Prime Minister to hold the Deputy Prime Minister to account for these comments. They're completely unacceptable. And if they are made acceptable, I think it's a really dark track that we're going down as a country.
And Peters described co-governance arrangements as race-based theory. Why do you believe this is misinformed?
I mean, again, like, I just have to refer to it as, like, topsy-turvy. Colonization was a racial system that, you know, rendered, like, made Māori unequal in their land. So to, like, it isn't, co-governance is a reflection of a racist society, right? You can't create, like, colonization created racial inequities, and the attempt to redress that is not the same as ideologies of racial supremacy. And, like, it's almost victim-blaming. And I think that is what is truly so disturbing about the comments, like, to compare it to this system of oppression, to compare, like, attempts to redress oppression, histories of oppression and colonization, it's really disturbing. And it's not equivalent. And I think everybody knows that. And it's the abuse of these histories. It's the abuse of these analogies. When, you know, whether it's David Seymour comparing co-governance to South African apartheid, or now Winston Peters taking it up to another level, comparing it to Nazi Germany, you know, it's actually really offensive to the people who've lived under these oppressive regimes. It is not Māori's fault that colonization happened and there was a system of racial hierarchy and inequality. That is colonization. The attempt to redress that is not equivalent to that.
What more do you believe could be done to condemn Winston Peters' comments?
I think our target needs to be Christopher Luxon. I think Luxon ultimately is the person who is accountable and responsible for the comments of anyone within this government. So I think we need to be, emailing Mr. Luxon's office and ensuring that there is some accountability for the Deputy Prime Minister. I mean, look, I would go so far as to say I don't think he's fit for the role. These comments really are that egregious that I think he should resign. But obviously that's a big call and I don't have the power to make that happen. But I don't think Winston Peters is fit to stand. I'm concerned that mainstream Jewish institutions in New Zealand have this focus on what's defending Israel and the actions of the Israeli government to the detriment of the New Zealand Jewish community. So when we actually see local instances of anti-Semitism, and it's disproportionately coming from the right, we don't really see these institutions being proactive or really defending our community. So it really does concern me that, like, real anti-Semitism is being kind of dismissed or, not fully being kind of pointed out and held to account because Winston Peters, for instance, is someone who's been a big supporter of Israel. So that really concerns me. The fact that Dayenu has come, stepped up and been really loud about this, I mean, ultimately, we're a collective of Jewish New Zealanders, but we are not the institutions that claim to represent our community. And so where are they? A comment, a single comment in a media piece isn't enough. We actually need to see advocating for our community.
That was Dayenu co-founder Justine Sachs on Winston Peters' comments comparing co-governance and Nazi Germany.
Scientists have finally found the clitoris.
The Wire.
We'll be back. We're just going to take a quick break, but let us know your thoughts on any of our pieces today. Text in on 5395. Keep it on the B.
With my new guitar and my two front teeth and my hair tied up and my lipstick green, I met this man from America. of the north, not south, with the vague disguise. He asked if I pulled out, and I said no, no. With my good girl smile and my niceties and my justifications, I had to leave it in the doorway. I met this man from France. He had big brown eyes. He asked if I dance, and I said yes, yes, yes. With my conversation, we danced a long time. Was that when I said goodbye, I met this man from Nihon, Karega Daisuki. Then my wishful thinking, I asked, would you marry me? And he said no. If you want another's heart, you better wash your mouth out before you make a start.
Thank you. Tony here from Tikawiti. Well, I've been listening to your sheep show every week with the girls, week in, week out, and I hold out for some actual sheep content. You know, it's all music, and I've had a gutful. How about a little less the clean and a little more how to clean your Toyota Hilux after a massive dagging session? Either pull your bloody head in or change the name of the show.
Ovinophiles are welcome to listen, but Freak the Sheep is really about that good, good New Zealand music. Taylor McGregor hand-delivers interviews, live performances, tempered classics and wretched demos from Godzone. Freak the Sheep with Taylor McGregor. Every Wednesday night from 9 till 11 on 95 BFM.
The evening's getting on, isn't it?
It upsets me so much that there's still people that we need to convince this is a real fucking thing. Real friggin' thing.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. Earlier this month, the government outlined its plans for transport, including scrapping free public transport for children and half-price fares for young people under 25 by the end of next month. I spoke to advocacy group The Future is Rail spokesperson Soraya Sidhu Singh about their opposition to this, as well as a collective protest action happening tomorrow calling on the government to centre transport in planning and funding. I started off our interview asking Singh for their thoughts on the government's transport plans.
So they've recently released something called the Government Policy Statement, or GPS, which is what they plan to prioritise in terms of funding for the next 3 years. And it is really backwards looking. So, you know, we know from our own history and what we invested in from the 1950s to actually the late up until the early 2000s, actually, that, you know, focusing so much investment in roads just doesn't work. We need to balance our investment across all the different types of transport modes, like walking, cycling, rail, public transport, and that's what creates the best outcomes for everybody, including drivers. What we're seeing in this new transport policy is that they are very much, very strongly shifting investment towards roads, and that's going to be a complete failure for their goals.
What concerns do you have in particular about the government's plans for transport?
So there is some really worrying things in there. They are planning to halve the investment in walking and cycling. After a couple of years, they're planning to reduce the investment in rail down to about 6% of what it previously was. And now we're very concerned that that means that they're planning on probably planning on privatising the entire network, because the head of KiwiRail has come out and said that the absolute bare minimum that they need just to keep the lights on is $150 million a year, and the government is planning to reduce it to $20
million. What impact will reducing public transport funding have?
At the moment, you know, we know that, for example, we've had really big reliability issues recently. There are a number of problems that affect the network. Like, for example, a lot of people don't understand why the interregional trains that we do have run so infrequently, and they're so expensive to buy tickets for. And that is all down to the lack of funding. So we're already in a situation where public transport, walking and cycling, have got really low rates of funding, and this government is planning on reducing them even further. I've spoken to some city council and regional council representatives on this, and one of the things that they're really concerned about is currently when they build new roading, for example, they can add walking and cycling infrastructure alongside that, and it's really, really cheap to do. This new policy statement says that they're no longer allowed to do that, so 100% of that road funding has to go on roads. So it's going to mean we're going to look at sort of a very American-style sort of street set up, I think, where there won't be footpaths, you know, necessarily along all roads in future.
Can funding alternative transport options be seen as a worthwhile economic investment, in your opinion?
Well, we know that if you want to make, if you want to do things like reduce congestion, which has a really big negative economic impact, if you just build more roads, it doesn't actually help the problem. It increases driving. So we know that we need to actually invest in alternative to driving. We need to make public transport really efficient, really fast, and we also need to make walking and cycling safe and enjoyable for people. And that's the only way of investing that actually works. So, you know, seeing them go in the opposite direction is incredibly concerning because, you know, we know that people are really concerned about things like potholes and, you know, poor levels of road maintenance, but that's actually caused by the, you know, the past that we have in New Zealand of over-investing in roads and not investing in the alternatives.
Can you tell our listeners a bit about your planned rally tomorrow over the government's transport policies?
That's right. If anyone can get to, is in Wellington or can get there, there's a rally at 5 p.m. at Parliament, and we definitely recommend you come along to that. Bring a sign, bring some musical instruments or something like that to make some noise. That's going to be a chance to hear from some people about why this is such a problem and to let the government know what you think of it. You can also make a submission on their government policy statement on transport by going to the Ministry of Transport website. That's one of the first items in their news. Or if you want to get a submission guide on what you know what you could cover in your submission, you can go to our group website, which is Transport for All. That's with the number 4.org.nz.
And that was the Future is Rail spokesperson Saraya Sidhu Singh on their opposition to the government's transport plans.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa, mō tēnei wiki, ne te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki o mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on The Monday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. Axe Simon Court, Jewish New Zealander and co-founder of Dayenu, New Zealand Jews Against Occupation, Justine Sachs, and the Future Israel spokesperson, Saraya Sidhu Singh. Nira hoki te mihi, kia koutou, e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is the 1 to 4.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.